I like looking at the world as it is today and how it will be.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sort of an information systems guy, and a rate of change in computer technology doubles every 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I say by the year 2029, computers will be able to fool human beings into thinking that they're human. So the age of singularity will be here. And that's not too far down the road. And humans will be able to interface with computers and have everything, all knowledge in real time. How would this change for religions or a particular group? Will we need to study? Well, will we have all the answers in a nanosecond?
That's a simple question. I think people write books about things like this, or at least write papers. For a quick response, what's your name again?
Peter,
that's right, Peter. Peter, I would say the kind of knowledge that I'm referring to is different than the knowledge of information. Because again, you are absolutely right that with technology, it is amazing, right? How much information the individual can access or has access to at their fingertips, right? And not only is that information vaster and vaster, but it's quicker and quicker, right? But in Buddhism, the key thing is that person at the keyboard, right? How is that person? How is their mind? And the kind of information, the kind of knowledge that is accumulated in the way you're talking is not necessarily a knowledge that will produce insight, that will produce understanding of who and what I really am. See, that's the key thing, the subject, the person at the keyboard. Who is that person? Do they know who they are? Right? Do they have, how is their mind? You know, if their mind is just chock full of information, miming the information that is running on their keyboard, right, or on their screen, and they're just they have a mind just running faster and faster, chock full of more and more information, right, moving faster and faster. What is that experience like for that person? Again, are they happier? Are they more at peace? How are their relationships with, the people they have relationships with other than their computer? See, computer relationships are easy because nothing's asked of you. Right? But in human relationships, things are asked of us. Right? And so it's a very different process. Again, this is something I know nothing about. You know a lot more. But we know that these days people have a lot of their relationships are virtual relationships, right? A lot of their conversations, or many of their conversations, are virtual, which means they're going on through the medium of an iPhone or a PDA or a computer. In other words, it's not face-to-face in this way that you and I are looking at each other and talking to each other and in a back-and-forth kind of way. It's a way where I'm looking at a screen and you're looking at a screen and our screens are interrelating. And that, I am not sure what that experience is about in terms of any kind of meaningful, satisfying way. I'm not sure the content of virtual relationships way. In the same way, I'm not sure that the content of just gathering more information. I spent several years working in a prestigious university, in a prestigious department, right? It was actually a department of psychology. Psychology deals with what? The mind, the emotions, right? I mean, and again, this may sound a little judgmental. I mean, I have never been around a bunch of more screwed up people than the people in academia. And anybody who's been there may know what I'm talking about, right? Now, why is this? I mean, these were people who were, many of them, brilliant, right? And had could write brilliantly and just, and talk about things brilliantly, and yet in their personal lives and interactions were often not very happy. And many of them were fairly, I thought, narcissistic, you know, life revolved around themselves. And the backbiting, the politics, I mean, it was, right? So, so that tells you that somehow the acquiring of information and that kind of knowledge does not necessarily have anything to do with personal growth and transformation. So, if you ask me in this world that you're talking about, which may occur and probably is occurring and will occur, is that going to produce happier human beings, grounded human beings, people capable of loving and being loved and enjoying life? I don't know. It seems to be, and again, I'm certainly not an expert. It's interesting, you know, because these electronic kind of way of living and interacting is so recent, right? And as you say, is changing so quickly. Already significant problems are occurring, right? I mean, people already talk about, addiction to their computers. It's like, where people used to talk about, I got to stop watching the boob tube, you know what I'm saying? Spending too many hours and it just flies by. And now people are talking that way about their, being on the internet and surfing the internet. There's a quality of compulsivity to it. And that people are so involved in this virtual world, in this information world that is so quick, that is often preventing them from having real experiences, right? So it is interesting that the human beings, we take ourselves wherever we go. And we have a way of just, taking something, which again, like you say, the information technology certainly makes certain things much easier, right? I mean, the amount of information that one can access if one is actually trying to research something, right? But again, now everybody is researching something, right? You can research anything. And so people are spending more time just cruising around researching, and one thing leads to another, and in the same way that advertising, it seems, developed a very skillful way of manipulating people, we know that the computer, these search browsers and all that, have an incredible way of kind of taking you from one to another, to another. Before you know it, you've been halfway around the world, and you think, what? Because I have more information, somehow I know something. And I wonder if that's really true. Or have we just cruised around and just endlessly gone through more facts and figures and interpretations? And at the end of the day, do we really know anything more? Are we really any wiser or more intelligent, just the same way we could ask ourselves, having spent 3 hours in front of the TV or something, it's like, and how am I now? Right? And one might have to ask, maybe I could have spent that time in a more meaningful way. So, I mean, it's interesting, right? Yeah, I think that's our challenge. I mean, I am not sure that having 200 friends on Facebook really means I have friends. You know, it may mean that I'm sharing information of what I'm doing and what they're doing, and we're kind of keeping up with each other in that way. But I don't know if that's really friendship. I'm posing questions more than answers, but we have to be careful, because we know, I think, as human beings, our relationship with technology has often become problematic, you know? I mean, there was a time back in the 30s and 40s and 50s when the introduction of appliances, you know, was supposed to be what? Liberating. Look at all this time you'll have now. But people are as busy as ever. So these, you know, oftentimes these machines, you know, that we think are going to produce good, oftentimes it doesn't work out that way, right? It's, you know, human beings, because we often don't approach our life and the things of our life in an insightful, intelligent, careful way, that we just jump right in, and then only afterwards do we, you know, see what we have wrought, you know, and like you say, things are just happening so quick. It was funny, there was a cartoon I saw recently. It was like in a city, and there were all these people walking around in the city, and all of them had sticks, you know, like blind people have. Did people see that? And they're all kind of walking like this, you know, like blind people. And what you see is they're like this because they're all in their left hand, they all have a phone, you know. So because they're so looking here, they have to they can't see what's in front of them because they're so absorbed. It was quite humorous. But there's some truth that way, right? I mean, people do walk around with these contraptions, always looking at them. Well, if you're always looking at your electronic device, which is basically just giving you information, how do you notice flowers and trees and people? You know, you're always hooked into an alternative universe that seems, in the moment, to be important. But if we're spending so much more and more of our time in this virtual world, then we have to be spending less and less time in the interactive world, whether it's interactive with human beings or with nature. And human beings cut off from sources of real nourishment, you've got to wonder what's going to happen to them. Right? I mean, we know now that that what used to be electronic games, right, gaming and games that kids played, is now the way war is being conducted, right? I mean, you know, you can sit in a, you know, you can sit in a control room, you know, watching a board, and you can carry out war, right? So it's, you know, just the same way you'd be playing a virtual game, and it's probably almost, how do you distinguish between the two, you know? Between that car and that bad guy you blew up in your game, as opposed to that was a real person. You know what I'm saying? Because you're just seeing. So I don't know. I mean, I'm really just responding to your question, but
reality.
But again, unfortunately, the way things are in our world is these technologies, because they're so driven by certain forces, tend to have a life of their own. And it's kind of only afterwards do we see the consequences, right? Like we're dealing with the consequences of what? 30, 40, 50 years of dependence on petroleum, right? Which we thought was such a wonderful thing. And now there are people saying it's actually could be leading to the destruction of our environment and life as we know it. And we're only finding that out when? Kind of afterwards, when we see the results. But that tends to be, it's interesting. I recently read something by Thich Nhat Hanh. Everybody knows who Thich Nhat Hanh is? That was a little bit pessimistic. He was really talking about the world situation and global warming and the whole thing, and reversing all the things that people are concerned about and science is concerned about. And he said, unfortunately, most human beings these days don't even look into the sources of their own suffering and seek answers to it. Yeah, so how could you expect the world, which is just a collective of individuals, to have that capacity? It was interesting. I mean, people don't have the ability to stop their own suffering. People don't have the ability to stop their own activities of their body, speech, and mind that may be being destructive in their life. Right? So if an individual can't even do it for themselves, I mean, how can you expect a collective body to be able to look deeply into the causes of this environmental situation we've got ourselves in and really come up with answers and put them into activity when individuals can't even do that for themselves? So it was, doesn't mean that those of us who care about these things don't continue, but I think it was an observation that that had some insight. I guess on the other side, that is a greater impetus for those of us who believe that that it is only when individuals begin to take responsibility for themselves and for their lives and for their choices and stop just being mindless consumers of what's given them. And what's given them doesn't just mean from the culture without, but many of us are mindless consumers of what was given to us by life, by our parents, by all the stuff that has been given us. We have not looked deeply into that and decided which is worth keeping and which is not worth keeping, which is really supportive of the kind of life and person I want to be and which isn't. That's why I would say that in the Buddhist tradition, the belief that societal change begins with the individual. It doesn't deny that the collective society doesn't need to make wise choices for itself. But if the individuals in that society are not willing to undertake their own commitment to responsibility for themselves and for their life and the choices they make and for the way they interact with the environment and other people, and make a personal commitment to do that in a way that is congruent with their values, how will society, the collective body of individuals, ever do that? Buddhism teaches the law of cause and effect. This creates that. That is created by this. And so, if we want a peaceful world, if we want a just world, if we want a kind world, if we want a world that is good, wise stewards of its resources, right? Then that can only come from people who are that way. It can't come from anywhere else, right? I mean, if we want a world where people care for one another, that can only be created by individuals who care for one another. And when you get enough of those functioning in the world, you'll begin to have more of a caring society. When you have a significant amount of individuals who have renounced violence personally in their life, and refuse to interact with anybody else in a violent, aggressive way, and are committed to acting and interacting in a kind, loving, supportive, helpful way, then, you know, that kind of energy will be brought into the larger societal body, and you'll begin to see societal transformations.